All right, welcome to an episode of Locked On NHL, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your host, Adam Danker of Locked On Lightning, and with me is my co-host, Chris Massilli of Locked On Avs. Chris, how are we doing?
I'm doing well, man. It's funny how these things work out and how we were asked to do cover for this show while your team is in the Stanley Cup final. It's like fate.
Yeah.
Could not be better.
I know. It's awesome. Like my life, when I thought that doing one single show with a team that is prone to going overtime on any night, and then coupling that with a national show, actually the national show is a lot easier to do. So this is kind of a cool thing. Not as daunting as I thought it would be, but I'm glad to kind of talk about the Lightning twice in the span of a week.
And the fact that they're winning.
I mean, you already know me. If the Lightning were losing, I would just be the worst person to talk to already. But you know what? We're recording this Wednesday night, right after the Lightning just won game three. 5-2. I'm in a good mood right now. We were talking about before. I've been kind of donning the old school 2004 St. Louis jersey to kind of bring some good luck to them. We're going to talk about the Dallas game / Lightning game, just the series in general. We're going to get Chris's thoughts from him being strictly a Western Conference team host, you know, what he has seen from this Stars team that maybe was different in the series against his Avalanche. And then we'll talk about the awards. You know, both me and Chris have some, we have thoughts.
We have things to say.
Yes. We have very, very, might possibly be so, harsh words. So let's start with the Dallas game.
Well, I was just going to say, I don't want to, you're in a good mood and you have every right to be. I don't want to end this show when we talk about the awards in a bad mood. So I think we're over not winning certain things. And I think winning a Stanley Cup playoff game trumps not winning specific awards, but we'll get to that stuff.
Yes. I mean, I do like, the feeling of winning a game, but I need more. I need more. This isn't enough. You know, winning a cup isn't enough for me. Yeah. we'll get into that at the end of the show, and I'm sure that'll. So let's just jump into this whole series. We spoke about it on the last show about, some of the things that we thought we were going to see going into this series, just from this Dallas team. What have you seen just from these first three games from this Dallas team that maybe you didn't see against the Avalanche?
Well, the interesting thing is, this is what I saw. I saw two different teams against the Avalanche. The game one against Tampa Bay, they looked like they did in game one and game two of against Colorado. But that seems to have worn off pretty quickly against Tampa Bay in games two, and especially the game that just ended. They want to play that type of game that they typically play, which is a very aggressive game. And, most opponents are going to be up for that challenge, and Colorado specifically was up for the challenge, but they got riddled with some injuries and they didn't have the talent to answer. Tampa does, and Tampa is. So the way that Dallas is wanting to kind of play this rough style of game, Tampa's up for it and they can return the favor. And they're so talented that it doesn't seem to affect them that much. Colorado got a little bit too mixed up in it and kind of took the bait. I don't see Tampa Bay really doing that too much.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I spoke on the episode that also be dropping when this episode drops on my own show. I spoke about how game one was more of a Tampa kind of sizing up Dallas. Now, I don't know what kind of path Colorado took up until the point of playing Dallas, but if you look at the teams that Tampa played before Dallas, they had Columbus, Boston, and the Islanders. And they've been tested, and all those teams, those three teams, tried pretty much the same thing. Maybe a little less for Columbus, but they really tried, playing more of that physical style, really trying to bully around Tampa. And because that was really something that was kind of more so the blueprint on how to beat Tampa during the regular season. And I guess maybe these teams didn't realize, or because you didn't really see a lot of time from the trade deadline acquisitions with Barkley, Goodrow, Coleman, and signing Zach Bogosian. There wasn't really a lot of there wasn't a big sample size with those guys on this team to really get a feel for that. Maybe they should try something different. And it's kind of interesting how they still are trying to do it that way, and it's not working. And with that game one, Tampa really, you know, they sized up, they saw what the equation was, and really that's take Khudobin out of it early, and then it's going to be a free for all from there.
Yep.
And it's worth two games in a row. And I stated on my show, and I'll state it right here, I think the series is over if they continue this. I don't see Dallas coming back from this. They have, I think we spoke about it on the last time we were on Locked On NHL together, where I said they have a goal scorer by committee kind of recipe going for them. And that's not really something you could really sustain going forward, especially if your goaltender is not solid as Khudobin was.
No, you get to him and you know, Dallas is going to have a tough time. And he, you know, if you can get to him early, he's one of those guys that, you know, if you don't get to him early, the confidence just builds, and then this team will get a 1-0 lead, and they know how to play defense, and they can really clamp down and make that 1-0 score last. But if you get them off their game and you put up points like Lightning were, they're not really built to come back the way that some other teams are. So, yeah, the Lightning had – it was weird. Like the Lightning head coach made a comment after game one or before game one saying like, you know, I think this is going to be like a feeling out game. And it was almost like he was giving his team an excuse to lose. It was okay if you lost that game, and they ended up losing it. But you could tell like he took that game tape and was like, okay, now we're just going to figure it out and really stick it to you. And that's what they've been doing. So I mean, I hate to say after three games it's over, but if Dallas doesn't change, you got to give Dallas a chance to change something on their end, because whatever they've been doing the last two games isn't working. So they have to come out with a different style. I don't know what that is. I mean, you've been playing, it's a full season at this point. You know what I mean? You're kind of set in your ways with how you're going to play, but you got to do something different. You've got to get ahead. That's Dallas's game. Get ahead, play defense. And when they can't do that, they struggle.
Yeah. I mean, you said it perfectly right there. And I'll just add on to that. Game four is a very risky game. Game four of the Stanley Cup Finals is not the time to kind of be playing around with some things and mix it up. Cause that's kind of, you're basically saying, all right, let's experiment. This might be a throwaway game. And then if it doesn't work, you're on the verge of the series ending the very next game. And that's not something that I think Dallas wants to put themselves into. I really thought if Dallas could have gotten Tyler Seguin going, we would be talking about this series a lot more differently right now. But he has kind of been pretty much a non-factor. He's come close a couple of times. But the interesting thing, first of all, before I get into that, can we just talk about Steven Stamkos? How amazing this whole story.
I thought we were going to go this whole show without talking about him.
I really tried to.
No, it's impossible.
It's impossible, yeah. just hasn't played a game since February. Before anything really, you know, really hit the fan with COVID and all that, the timetable was he was going to be back for the Eastern Conference Finals. And that was wishful thinking. And then, of course, COVID hits. You know, we postpone the rest of the season. Playoffs are kind of a question mark. And then we go back to voluntary workouts. First day, Stamkos hurts himself. And then you just have this kind of the Steven Stamkos saga throughout the playoffs. And finally comes back. First shot since February, scores. Just ridiculously sharp angle, far-sighted goal. I mean, he couldn't have placed it any better. Just vintage Stamkos. You know, I really thought that was going to be kind of something that in my mind right after that, obviously I'm biased in this situation. I thought he was going to get one right away after that. but of course he only played 5 shifts, 2 minutes and 47 seconds of ice time. So no. They clearly weren't trying to rush him back, which is the smart thing to do, but at the same time, you're really risking, but you know, because you also have Braden Point who's been dealing with an injury. So you're really running the risk. If he gets hurt, which he did leave and go into the tunnel for maybe a couple of shifts or so, if Point goes down and Stamkos can't really go the rest of the game, you're really spreading this team thin. Yeah. And then that could really run into some really big issues down the line, especially against this Dallas team who loves to play in your face defense. Do you think that maybe this is something that we could see for the rest of the series? In my personal opinion, I think that if he can't play a complete game, why take the chance?
You're talking about for Stamkos, obviously.
Yes.
I mean, at this point, like, you're up in the series, so now you can kind of play that game of like, let's see what we can, if we need to play him, because if you ask him, he's probably gonna want to be out there. But this was almost like, you know, like the Willis Reed returning for the Knicks, and, you know, just and getting him out there for a couple shifts, and what did he do in that shift? Like, dude, that was, those are shots that I watch and I'm like, man, I wish I could do that. Like, have that angle that close to the goalie and get that much lit. Like, that angle was like as sharp as cheddar, dude. Like, that was it was amazing. And to not have played since February and make that shot, crazy.
There's maybe a handful of guys in the league that could do that on any given night, and just, you know, this is why I think he's so underrated. Just stuff like that, having not played, like you said, in so long. I mean, it's been insane. But this is definitely going to.
But I don't know. Like, do you, like you said, like, do you risk that? I don't know. Like, how?
I don't know.
I don't know what his injury is. Like, is it that? Is it so bad where he can't go? Like, did he not? Did he only play? You said he played five shifts. I mean, yeah, two minutes, 47 seconds. Was that intentional, because just to get him back into the flow, or did he tweak something?
I honestly think it could have been a mixture of both. I think they wanted to see how his body would respond, because, you know, playing in practice and as opposed to playing in a real game is totally two different situations. Your mindset is completely different, and your body can react differently as well. So I think maybe it was a mixture of he was feeling good, maybe tweak something, and then it was just a coach, trainer, Stamkos decision on, let's not push this any farther. We're winning this game. You know, why risk it? You know,
right.
And I think if they do decide to sit in the next couple of games,
I would say if he's not out there next game, he's not going to come back, would be my guess.
Yeah. I mean, at least it was good to see a good player, a very good player like him, at least get one in there. You know, it would have been a shame to not have had him be able to play at all, especially.
That's exactly what I was going to bring up. What if this was just in case Tampa Bay wins it, he can say he was on the ice for something. Yeah. And even if he didn't score, he was out on the ice for 2 minutes and 47 seconds. Yeah. Now he put a goal on the stat sheet. And now it just means a little bit more to him. If they win, they end up winning the Stanley Cup, he can say he contributed to it.
Right. And you really saw the confidence level when they were to start the game really at a whole different level for Tampa than you've seen the last couple of games. Even during the intermission, it looked like, I don't think the guys knew that Stamkos was playing this game. They were, from what I remember, they were talking to Killorn between the periods, and, you know, they were discussing how big of a deal this was, obviously, to the team, and they wanted to see him play, of course, but I don't think they were really, I think the plan was originally to have him maybe go out for warmups, kind of do sort of like a, you know, kind of just mess with Dallas in that regards. Mm. And then I guess he felt good enough to go, and Cooper was like, all right, you know, let's put him out there.
All right.
And even if he's not doing a lot, I mean, he also played on the fourth line. You still saw how spaced out the ice was, you know, how, especially when he had the puck, Dallas really, the defenders really gravitated for him. And that really, even though it really didn't lead to anything serious, it definitely opened up the ice a lot more for Tampa, which is, super deadly to this team.
I mean, the goal that he scored, like the space that he created for himself, he looked like he was – it wasn't just he was skating around and puck landed on his stick and he took a shot. Like, he made a nice move to get around. I don't remember who the defender was, but he was kind of pressed up against the boards and he just had one little push to get right past him. It was a athletic play. So
yeah,
if he was hurting, it didn't show on that play. I don't know if, you know, something happened somewhere after that, that, you know, we're kind of speculating on,
yeah,
on all of this right now, but for the couple shifts he was out there, he looked okay.
I mean, he looked decent and he didn't really, yeah, there wasn't really anything strenuous he really had to do other than maybe that one goal. Right. So, you know, it was a good sight to see, but I wouldn't really expect much from him. Now, before we wrap up our playoff talk, I just want to throw this kind of idea out to you that I saw on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Once Khudobin was pulled, somebody threw out the idea on Twitter that this has all the makings of a Ben Bishop return.
Oh.
Now, I don't think that Khudobin's played particularly bad. I just think that, you know, a lot of things go into it. There was a couple of goals, especially the Hedman one tonight, in which where the guys in front of him just, they just dropped the ball. You can't leave Victor Hedman. I don't care if he's a defenseman, all alone in the slot by himself. Yeah. He feasts on those opportunities. So have you heard anything? Now, I wasn't entirely sure. I know Bishop was kind of hurt for a while. Is it more so they just don't have enough room for him? They're not going to carry two goalies? Is it just more – is that really something that he is a possibility with this Dallas team? I can't see Dallas – you know, I said on my show, stick with the guy that got you there. I don't understand the reason why this would even be –
yeah, man.
You know, that's exactly. Just someone trying to start a storyline, that's all. But it was an interesting thing to see. I mean, the fact that he's been pulled was kind of shocking.
I don't, yeah, like you said, like, you've come this far because of him.
Yeah.
So why pull the trigger?
Exactly. That's
just, you know, it's fans getting insatiable and, you know, wanting.
Full disclosure, it was a Lightning fan too. So I'm just going to say that.
Oh, wow.
Shocking.
well, that makes sense because then the series is in the bag. If a Lightning fan wants that move to be made, it's because they want to. Sure, they're going to win this Stanley.
Well, that also kind of sets up the cool kind of full circle storyline of him facing his former team. That's kind of cool, but
that'd be the only way. I don't see it happening.
Yeah, I don't see it, but that it's going to be an interesting finish to the series, and you know, hopefully Tampa comes out on the other end as winners. I fully expect them to. And yeah, I'll stick to my guns. I say I think this series is over.
It's trending in that direction. I'll get it.
All right. So we're going to talk about our feelings on some of the award announcements that happened over the past couple of days. But first, let's talk about our sponsor, RockAuto.com. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto part customers online for the last 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules, brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in just a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. Best of all, prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low, and the same for the professionals and the do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? So go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck, right? Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box, so we know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. So now we're approaching kind of a sensitive topic for both of us right now, and that's the NHL awards. I will give the floor to you, Chris.
Yeah.
let's start with the Hart Trophy, and then we'll move on to obviously the Calder, which is kind of a good topic for you to kind of end your rantings, if you will.
End it on a good note.
Yes. So let's move on to the Hart Trophy. Leon Draisaitl from the Edmonton Oilers won. Your Nathan MacKinnon came in second, and with Artemi Panarin coming in third. I personally didn't think this was a surprise. I think one and two, Draisaitl, MacKinnon, I didn't have an issue with either. Obviously, you being the Avalanche fan, you have opinions and feelings. Let's hear them.
Well, you know, if you want to call me a homer, call me a homer. But just you know, hear me out. Like, are we basing the Hart Trophy on what the term most valuable player means in value, or are we basing it on stats and who had a phenomenal season? If you're basing it on who had the phenomenal season, then your pick is Leon Draisaitl, and I'm not going to change your mind. If you're basing it on the term value, I don't know how you pick anybody other than Nathan MacKinnon. If you don't watch him, I'm not talking about his talent. You know about his talent, but know the amount of games lost that the Avalanche had on their team this year from his line mates. Mikko Rantanen played, I think, in 44 games this year. Landeskog played in like the low to mid 50s. You can go up and down this roster, and just about everybody missed time. And the guys that they brought up from their AHL affiliate for the first time, and they were expected to kind of just pick up as like the next man up mentality. And he not only kept their head above water in terms of the playoff standings, he kept them at the top of the standings. They were fighting for the number one seed. They were 2 points behind St. Louis, and it is directly related to him. Draisaitl, and I don't like using the, you know, he's got Connor McDavid argument, like whatever, like he does, but that I wouldn't take that away from him. I look at, okay, like who look at the players that Nathan MacKinnon didn't have playing with him, and they are his line mates and beyond. And I think Connor McDavid missed 7 games this year. Mm-hmm. So Draisaitl was playing with the best player on the planet pretty much the whole season. And Nathan MacKinnon was not doing that. And to put up, if I told you that, you know, all of these players on the Avalanche were going to miss as many games as they did, what would, and if Nathan MacKinnon put up X amount of points, you would consider that a good season. You would probably tell me if he put up 80 points, that would be a phenomenal season with the players that he lost, and he put up 93. So I don't know. Like I get where people are coming from. If you're just going to, and I think Draisaitl deserves the Ted Lindsay. Had no problem with him winning that. That's voted on by the players. That is for who had the best season, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. For the Hart, I do this in any sport. And if you don't believe me, you don't believe me. But I always look at the word value. And I feel like we've lost that in the MVP voting across the board in any sport. It's pretty much come down to who had the best season, and that's how we vote on it. And I just don't agree with that.
Yeah. I mean, I do have to agree with you, and I know it's not, I mean, the votes are pretty much already in by the time, but you really hit the nail on the head about value. If you look at just how their two teams ended up, one got knocked out in the first round, and then one was, I believe, a win away from making the Stanley Cup Finals. Yeah. Now, I know, obviously, that's not taken into consideration, but and also just Nathan MacKinnon was lighting it on fire in the Stanley.
Unbelievable.
In the playoffs. Yeah. So,
and that's what I'm saying. Like, look where his team finished in the standings with what he had to work with compared to what Draisaitl did with a pretty healthy team, and they were down further in the standings. Still would have made the playoffs, but it's just night and day to me on what MacKinnon had to work with. And he was his normal self. It was a great thing to watch him this year. It really was.
Yeah. I mean, the voting across the board for all these awards is broken. Case in point, JT Miller got a fifth place vote for the Hart Trophy. That's not a knock to JT Miller.
Well, there were some, guys who have credentials that were voting and have admitted that they didn't put McKinnon on in the top five.
I just think there needs to be some sort of
overhaul
of the voting. I mean, I'll get into that when we talk about the Norris, because I just have. But let's end on a good note with your kind of side of things, Cal Makar. Not a surprise at all. Another one where it was a toss-up, him and Hughes. These two guys are probably going to be in the conversation for the Norris for probably the next 10 to 12, 15 years. So,
You
know, pretty much a good start to Cal Makar. I mean, we've spoken before. Cal Makar is just insane.
He's awesome, man. Like, he is – and to be at the age he's at and doing the things he do, and just the offensive – defenseman mentality that he has, like, he, you know, he's dangerous on the power play. He's a great, great defender already. And just the fact that he's going to keep improving is just a scary thought. And then you said, you know, him and Hughes are going to be competing for the Norris, and Makar already is. He finished ninth in Norris voting.
I had to look back when I looked at the voting results. I was shocked.
That's nuts.
No.
That's nuts.
So that has to be some sort of, I guess, placement record for a rookie. I can't remember the last time I remember a rookie defenseman finishing up that high in the Norris. But I mean, he's had a great season. I'm sure he's just, you know, the scary thing is he's probably gonna get even better. I mean,
absolutely,
guy's just starting out. And you know, with Nathan McKinnon, He's going to win a heart at some point. He has to.
You would think so.
The guy
I just don't want it to be – maybe we can segue into this. I just don't want it to be that Roman Yossi, like
– that sympathy award.
We feel bad for you. You haven't won it yet. Here you go. I don't want it to be that.
Yeah. All right. So let's just, you know, let's just rip the Band-Aid off. The voting is broken. Okay. I'm tired of this. All right. If we're really going to get down to the nitty gritty now, the Norris is obviously awarded to the best defenseman. And what's the main job of a defenseman? To play defense well. Okay. So if you look at the candidates, the top three were John Carlson, who led the league for defensemen in points. He had a good season stat-wise. Defensive-wise, I'm sure if you looked at some tape, you wouldn't think that he was actually a defenseman. Maybe it's just an extra forward. But and then Roman Yossi, like you said, I mean, he had a decent season, but he wasn't otherworldly. And maybe I'm a homer as well, but at the same time, numbers don't lie. Victor Hedman, 66 games played, 11 goals, 55 points, plus minus of 27. Just usual. And that here's the thing. Usual numbers for Victor Hedman. And the guy has just been solid for this team year in, year out, especially this year where they were really kind of spread thin with all the injuries. And the argument was made for Carlson. Well, you know, he has the most goals and, you know, points and all that stuff. All right, that's great. But if you're going to award – the Norris isn't for that. If you want to if you want to award a defenseman for that, let's make a Bobby Orr award, okay? That's problem solved.
Right.
We have a defensive award for forwards, the Selke. Why not have an offensive reward for the defenseman?
I like that.
I don't understand why, you know, why this hasn't been spoken about. And so I mean, you know what, Roman Yossi is a good player. You know, he's having a tough go of it in Nashville, but that's no reason to give him the sympathy because then you're just downplaying the award.
I mean, what do they typically look at when they vote for this? Is it just, you know, who had the most – well, it's not who had the most points, because Hedman did have the most points for defenseman.
It was Carlson.
Carlson Hedman, did have the most
points. Yeah, okay. Hedman was right there with Yossi
Are you looking at how they play defense, and or are you looking at the offensive numbers?
All right. Well, when you're looking at a defenseman, this is how I look at it, because, I mean, I'm one of those guys where, you know, we all have a favorite position that we kind of like gravitate towards doing hockey. Mine's defenseman. So when I'm looking at the quality of a defenseman, I'm looking at point shares, which is basically the amount of points contributed by the player. Because these guys aren't going to be putting up 80 points. You know, these aren't high scorers. Unless you're John Carlson, who's, you know, in the 70s. But you're looking at plus minus. You're looking at time on ice. And then you really just kind of, you know, obviously there's all those other kind of advanced metrics that we could get into, but that's a whole other episode. But really, those are the main three. And then you're obviously looking at success of your team and assist as well, if you want to kind of throw that in there. And for the most part, if you were just looking at this as Hedman and Yossi, if you're really following the guidelines of why you're voting for this award and what you're looking for, Yossi and Hedman should really technically be the two front runners. I mean, we could get Amy Rothenberger from Locked On Capitals. She'll be the first one to tell you that John Carlson did not deserve the Norris Trophy. but I just think it, you know, it is it a good thing that he won? Yes, congratulations. You know, we'll applaud you on a good career and feel bad for you. But I think you're really, at the end of the day, you're devaluing this award. And that's really what it comes down to. Now, as for the Vezina,
right,
I'm not as upset.
Okay.
Connor Hellebuck was the whole reason as to why the Jets were even on the fringe of getting into the playoffs.
See, now that is the argument. Like, that is a good, valid argument because he had value to his team.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? He, without him, we are not talking anything about his team and coming anywhere close to playoffs. Probably not.
He finished sixth in the Hart Trophy standings. So that shows, you know.
Yes.
But here's where I have the issue. And it's not with Connor Hellebuck. It's with Andre Vasilevskiy finishing third. Now, obviously, at the end of the day, and, you know, when it's all said and done, that really doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
But Tuukka Rask, the case could be made, okay, his team won the Jennings Award for giving up the least amount of goals. But this Boston team was essentially a two-headed monster in that, you know, that Tristan Jarry was really, you know, the other contributor. It wasn't just the Tuukka Rask show out there. But really, with Connor Hellebuck, I'm just going to list off his numbers. 58 games played, 31 wins. He had six shutouts, too, which led the league. Wow. So, and if you really look at the Jets team, they had nothing this year. Patrick Laine had an off year.
I think they're looking to get rid of him, believe it or not.
Yeah, I heard that, which was crazy. And of course, if that does happen, we'll talk about it. But the fact that they're actually kind of giving up on him this early, maybe there's more to it than maybe just performance. But yeah, I mean, that was maybe where I drew the line. I think it was just Norris was – I wasn't expecting Hedman to win anyway. It was just the nature of – the whole backstory of what it was. And then just Vasilevskiy, I mean, he's won it before. He's probably going to win it again. So it's not that big of a deal. At the end of the day, I think, you know, as much as I said when we spoke about this, if I want more, and that really more so pertained to the Norris Trophy, because I feel like not a lot of people realize how good of a player Victor Hedman is. I mean, he broke up a play, saved a goal tonight on a breakaway.
Wide open. Or no. What was the,
it was early on. It was like right after the first goal of the game, Gurianov breakaway, and Hedman just races up behind him.
Oh yeah. When he kind of, he
lifted his stick a little bit.
That was a thing of beauty.
And I mean, the thing with him is that, he's proven it right now. He could score. He could play defense. We all know that already. But he's so fast for how big he is.
Mm-hmm.
And he's such a durable player. And it's one of those things where, since he's so good, consistently good, that kind of works against in his favor, to where kind of he gets kind of brought underneath the microscope in that regard. But you know what? The system ain't perfect, but it does need to be fixed.
What we got? I'm looking at Hellebuck and Rask stats just in games played. 58 for Hellebuck, 41 for Rask. Yeah. So that's, man, wow. I didn't know it was that much of a discrepancy.
Yeah, it was one of those things where, yeah, Tuukka Rask had a good season. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But like I said, the goaltending responsibilities were shared. It wasn't just the Tuukka Rask show, and I feel like the writers really didn't take that into account in the voting, you know, because we're not voting for the Boston Bruins in this situation. I mean, that's what the Jennings Award is for.
Yeah. And I can attest to the Winnipeg Jets, and their defense is not good.
Yeah.
So for him to put up the numbers he did with that,
yeah,
that defense is all the more impressive.
Yeah. And if you still don't believe us, save of the year was Hellebuck literally making a save behind his back while he was facing inside the net. So he was literally doing everything he could. The only thing that I'm looking at Vasilevskiy's numbers, 52 games, 35 wins, goals allowed, a little bit over 2.5, save percentage of 9.17. Those two numbers kind of work against him in his favor.
How old is he?
He's like 25.
Oh, dude, he's gonna win a lot.
I know. He's good. I think he's got like at least 4.
He could
in his belt at he's least.
You know, when you have like whatever your football team is, when you have a quarterback that is young and you know you're set in that position for the next 10 to 15 years, it's got to be what you feel like having him in net right now.
Oh, it's just really a nice luxury to have. He actually just turned 26 in July, so.
He's old now.
Yeah, I mean, he's not old. Come on, he's only 2 years younger than me, so now you're making me feel old. But no, I mean, it's a nice luxury to have. It's just one of those things where maybe it's just me. You look at his age, it's like, oh, we only have X amount of years left before this gravy train is over. But you know what? The good thing about the Lightning is that they have this other kid in, and we'll just end the show on this. With our final thoughts after this, they have this other kid in waiting in the minors. He's in Sweden. He's like, he's like 6'4". He's bigger than Vasilevskiy. He's only 19 years old, so could be a possible successor to the throne in a Tampa couple Bay of years.
Tampa Bay likes those big goalies, don't they? With Bishop,
works. It works.
It's proven.
So yeah, what's your just to close things out? Little prediction maybe for the Stanley Cup finals, maybe predictions for, you know, maybe a little too early to tell predictions for next season for some of these awards.
For next year. Well, I think you have really annoyed Nathan MacKinnon. So I think he's ready to go off next year.
Are we saying like 50 goals from the Mac train?
If he wants to, he could. He passes. That's his thing. Like he's a unselfish player. Like he is looking to pass. He's always looking to pass, and he is usually in the top three in shots on goal. It's crazy. So that's a high number. I don't know if he could get it. If he really wanted to, he could probably get that number. That would be something else.
It's ridiculous.
For this series, I'm rooting for your boys. You know that, because I can't have a team in my division win the Stanley Cup. But I think Dallas comes back. I think Dallas is feeling a little bit embarrassed right now. So my fear is they're a dirty team. All right. So that's my fear, is they won't come out and play a hockey game. They'll come out and play like a dogfight and try to win it that way. I hope they don't do that, because they do have some talented players where if they focus on what they're supposed to do and get an early lead and play that lockdown defense, which is the best in the league, they have a chance. If they want to go the goon route, Tampa's up for that. They've proven it.
Yeah.
So I think Dallas will smarten up. I think they feel a little embarrassed. I expect a really good game out of them because now this is put up or shut up. You go down 3-1 against a team like Tampa, and then I will say what you are saying now, that this thing is over. But in the end, I don't think it's going to be enough. I think it'll be a very good fought close game, but I'm going to say like 3-2 Tampa in this next one.
Okay. Yeah. I think the rest of the series, you know, I said it's over, but at the same time, I think these games, even though Tampa will come out on top. I think it's going to be tight ones. Mm-hmm. And my prediction for next season, I think Quinn Hughes is winning the Norris. I think he's pissed off. He didn't get the Calder. He comes out and he just blows the doors off the rest of the defensemen in the league. Yeah. I think that's going to propel possibly Vancouver to another level than what we saw this year. So, but we'll have to see. Yep. Obviously we're a long ways ahead. I think the season starts in December.
Hopefully
it's not bubble hockey, but who knows.
I know.
But yeah, but this was great. Let's do it again. Of course
we'll do some draft next week.
Great conversation by Chris Massilli of Locked On Avs. Chris, where can they find you?
Over on Twitter, LOPN_Avalanche. It's pretty much where I do all my work, is through the show's Twitter page. Yep.
All right, well, they could find my show at LO_Lightning. Maybe we'll change the handle to 2020 Stanley Cup champions after that. and then you could find me at AP Danker, DENKER. I also tweet a little bit from there as well. So that's been it for today's episode of Locked On NHL, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Adam Danker. He's Chris Massilli. Have a good one, everybody.